You're listening to a podcast by BI Norwegian Business School.
Welcome back to Stay Ahead, a BI Norwegian Business School podcast. This episode is part of Strategy as Practice series, where practice meets theory and theory meets practice. Today's topic is leadership and communication in a fast-changing environment. Today, I have the pleasure of having with me Hilde Tonne, CEO of Statnett since March 2021. Hilde has previously held different leadership positions in Hydro Oil and Energy, Telenor and Rambøll. She is presently also the chairperson of the Research Council of Norway. She has held numerous board positions like Danske Bank, Hafslund, Det Norske Veritas, Statkraft and Vattenfall, just to mention a few. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm also pleased to be joined by Professor Per Ingvar Olsen. He's Professor Chair at the Department of Strategy and Entrepreneurship here at BI Norwegian Business School. His research interests include energy, innovation, and cooperatives. And since 2015, he's been head of the research at the Center of Connected Care at University Hospital. Welcome.
Thank you.
My name is Thomas Borgen, and I'm an industrial PhD candidate at the Department of Strategy and Entrepreneurship here at BI, and will be your host today. Hilde.
Yes.
When you were announced as the new CEO of Statnett, you said that this was a dream job. 1 year into the job, has it been a dream?
Absolutely. Very much so. I'm living the dream. This is about seeing that the mission of Statnett is at the center of what's happening in the world currently. And it's about the people I work with. So it's a dream, but it's a busy dream. Busy days.
It looks like you've been very busy. How has it been for a company who has maybe been living somewhat in the shadow to be so much exposed as you and the company has been during the last, dare say, 12 months?
I think we can say that the whole industry, the whole power industry, has been a little bit home alone, and Statnett with that. We have worked within a system that has served the Norwegian people well, and the Norwegian people have been very happy with it. And then, of course, approximately a month or two into my new job, I experienced what everyone else experienced, and that's an energy system on steroids, so to speak. And so we had to handle the fact that the green shift had already started a couple of years ago in the middle of a pandemic, and we had to set the company up organizational-wise and also work with our stakeholders and partners and customers in a totally new way, given that the energy system in full speed and with high tempo was showing that it was changing.
And this we will discuss much more about, and we're looking forward to that conversation. Per Ingvar, you are interested in several topics and research areas spanning across various industries, such as energy, healthcare, and agri-food sector. Is there a common denominator in your research?
There probably is. maybe somebody else could try to sort them out. I started out doing research on the electricity market reform system and this industry, and has a keen interest in the industrial dynamics and these challenges, these transformation processes. I worked with the other industries later and surprisingly tend to stay with them for a while, to get to know them in some depth and to get to the challenges that are really interested. And then you tend to move on. So it looks like a very diverse thing, but it's commonly about the transformation process of industries and the innovations that are underlying them.
Very good. And thanks for sharing that introductory remarks. So let's jump more into today's topic. And it's about leadership and communication in a fast-changing environment. Hilde is, as the CEO of Statnett, in the midst of an ecosystem of tremendous change, and you alluded to that, and an energy transition from fossil to renewables, amplified by the geopolitical unrest we're now seeing being unfold. And Statnett shall not only ensure reliability of power supply, but is a key participant in ensuring that Norway is rigged for expected and quite substantial increase in demand for electricity going forward. As a consequence of tremendous changes globally, regionally, and nationally, so how does Statnett's management navigate and lead in this environment? That's the questions of today. How can we learn? You kind of alluded to it, Hilde, but tell us more about the key learnings from the first year as CEO of Statnett.
I think, first of all, personally, one of my key learnings is to lift the perspective up to a CEO level and to be even more holistic than I have been used to in my other roles previously. Having said that, I don't think I've always worked in shifting environments, but I mean, of course, this is fairly extreme. I think what we started out with was the right thing to do. We started out with seeing the need for an operational strategy that could set our priorities right and that could help us make choices in a flexible, agile, and swift way when needed. So when changes are happening around us, we need to see how we can prioritize and do the things in the right tempo. So an operational strategy was developed. And we did that digitally in workshops with 30 people on Teams. A special situation, but it worked. And I was obviously new, but the people rolled up their sleeves and we worked together on that. So prior to the summer last year, we had a strategy in place. Approximately 10% of the job was done. Then we started out looking for an organizational structure that could work with that strategy. And I had to make a choice, and that was my choice. What tempo and to what extent should we do changes through that first shot of organizational changes? That was a dilemma. We could do it really quick and extensive, and really stir up the whole company. Or we could drag it out and give ourselves some more room to do things more balanced. So we chose the first. And the reason for that was we were a little bit in lack of time. We were behind with respect to the green shift already having started. The expectations around us showed us that we had to do fairly big changes. And internally, we had high expectations from young talents and people that really wanted to be part of the shift that was in front of us. So we chose the tempo. We chose radical change. It's working. And within Christmas, we had a new organization in place. Now we're embarking on the 75% job ahead of us, which is leadership and cultural development.
Very fascinating. And Per Ingvar, I mean, you have been studying, as you alluded to, the energy sector and the transition. And here, Statnett is probably coming in having a different or a different role, maybe. How do you see this perspective and that change they need to take?
It's a fascinating story that you're into, and we observe it from the outside. I studied this industry in the 90s, and there was also quite a tremendous change. It was a regulatory and market reform, which is a very different kind of change process. And since then, my interpretation is that Statnett has been a sort of very stable, clear business model. It's a regulated monopoly responsible for the grid systems and for building very rationally connections to other electricity systems, that where it can exchange energy with others so as to manage the unpredictable hydropower system and to manage it better. And this has been very rational, and it's a clear business model. So, and this goes on for more than 20 years. And then all of a sudden, you get this kick from the outside, this very sort of black swan event. Didn't expect it, and it was quite extraordinary. So my question is sort of, what happened when this sudden, dramatic events just pushed into your business? And how did you react to trying to make sense of what happened right there?
First of all, it's a very good analysis that you have. And I think Statnett and the way Statnett leadership and Statnett worked through those 10 to 20, at least last 10 years prior to me entering the scene, served the job right. I think it was well done. It was done incremental, rationally, through social economic work and no risk of over-investment and a very, very good focus. And they were able to do that. And then, of course, as you call it, the black swan arrived. And I think my background and the background of some of the leadership at Statnett now is that we have been through disruptive times. We have been through disruptive industries before. And this is actually a disruption. Going through the green shift with an energy system that is changing as we are sitting here, with CO2 prices that are rising 10 times and gas prices that are really challenging, and moving the electricity around is a huge task compared to what we might have seen before. We need to think disruption. We need to think agile leadership, actually. It's a little bit like digital development that I've been part of before. We need to think flexibility. And then in the middle of all that, you need something solid, which is an operational strategy that gives you a basis for prioritization and decision making. So when you have that basis, you can, over time, establish a culture that will allow people to be empowered and do their job within that basis. We're not there yet, but I'm pretty sure we're set up for it. One of the things we did, for instance, that I thought about as we saw this coming, and we thought about, was we had a fairly hierarchical structure, steep, set in their ways. So we flattened it. We took away one layer. We just did that. And then we also posted all the leadership positions so that we can enable what we wanted to get out of this. And that was diversity, renewal, transformation ability. Those three, every time we made decisions through the organizational development, we checked out on those three in order to be able to meet that new situation. And then, of course, the whole tempo in this. The decision and the dilemma that I talked about, where I chose, and that was my choice, between doing things really quickly and drastically, as opposed to step by step over time, I think we had to do that because of what you're describing there. Otherwise, we couldn't have met the situation we're in now.
Is there a difference in leading a state-owned enterprise versus a private institution, as you have mostly been in private institutions as you go through these changes?
The answer is yes, there is a difference. And then the difference is not necessarily only the ownership structure, because I've been part of partly state-owned companies before and know how to relate to the Norwegian state, for instance. But the role of Statnett, the role of and the task at hand is about robust professional considerations, knowledge and competence, shy away from politics and shy away from too much sometimes, in some people's view, strategy. So what we did with our operational strategy was to stretch the mandate a bit within the limits that we have, but we went from security of supply, for instance, that's it's always been there, And then we widened it and said sustainable value creation for Norway. So, of course, in a regular private company, you would have just done that. But when we did that, we need to discuss that with our surroundings a little bit because the role of Statnett is different.
So these quite substantial changes that happens here is, I think, very interesting in the sense that you have an established business model. And the business model is sort of well-funded and clearly sort of understood by everyone in the company because this is a grid company, it's an infrastructure company, it is, and it's doing trade with Europe with a role of basically doing peak load management. So we're not exporting energy, we are balancing grids in Northern Europe, and that's our business. Everybody understands it, and every change is sort of a tactical matter. It's not a strategic change issue. But then all of a sudden, something kicks in, decided by others on the outside of your overview, on the outside of your control, that forces you to have another business, to manage export to a large extent, or maybe later lots of import. Or that means that the very foundation of the business model is changing. So you're into strategy because it's strategic change. So my sort of a little question is, how do you relate to the established competence base that is based on the existing business model when you have to, and you recognize you have to consider changing to a very different business model? Who do you relate to and what do you get from the different people that is related to this? What are the controversies that you're facing?
Oh, yeah. That is the controversy, to become more strategic internally and externally. Mm. And I can start with externally. Who do you relate to? First of all, I have a board. We have a board. The whole strategy process with the board also related to widening that mandate. And we had good discussions with the board on that. And we played ball and got feedback and ended up with a level of strategic mandate that suited the board, and it was probably a wise level. We probably pushed it a little bit more than that, but we ended up with a good level. Then, of course, then we need to talk to our owner, we talk to regulatory authorities, and they get used to us over time. It's about communication here and there in meetings, and they get used to us, and they get used to the way we talk. But internally, leadership-wise, first of all, we need an executive team that is aligned on this. And we worked a lot on that. Of course, 15 workshops that we did digitally helped. So we were fairly aligned. Then we need to lead that out in the organizational structure with the people through the organization. And that takes time. There's a big surprise, for instance, in the organization when top management decided to do operational changes in the way we work with Sweden. Questions from below, is that the job of top management, really? Shouldn't we just decide that below? This is too strategic. This is too holistic. Mm-hmm. And we had some good workshops on that in the aftermath. We probably should have done it before, but we had to do it operationally. We have discussions on other holistic decisions that we are taking that are considered very strategic in the organization. And people think, shouldn't we just do those calculations and then pass them on for others to make decisions? So we have those internal, I would say, cultural developments through leadership on becoming more strategic than before.
But that means that when you have to change your the sort of essential, the core of your business model, you have to pull in your delegated responsibilities from below and pull it all up and redistribute it.
Yes.
And there is always negative reactions to that. People are used
at least
to being,
surprised.
To having responsibilities and to do their work with a trust from above. Mm. And all of a sudden, it's not trusted. In the sense that they have to do something different that they cannot control, so this is a difficult restructuring of management process.
And the whole process of the executive team is much more operational than it has ever been. And that is not only due to the task at hand and the changes that you describe, which is spot on, but it's also due to a leadership style. I have to admit that. I'm very operational and I would like my team to be operational. And so it's a mixture of both. But of course, being operational at these times and being hands-on is needed in order to be ready for changes that can come very abrupt, to understand decision-making in disruptive times. So what we see is that we get these surprises. For instance, people that were used to doing calculations, as I mentioned, on societal economics, and that was the answer to everything. They are now getting used to handing that in to a holistic decision-making process that ends up in a leadership decision, which is fairly natural and in private companies, as you described, Thomas. But it's also needed here. And that transformation in leadership and culture is being received fairly positive. People are, you know, asking for changes and asking for clarity and asking for top management to be transparent and open and driving change. But of course, sometimes when it happens, it's not that comfortable for everyone.
If I may, because here we're discussing very interesting topics about how you have moved on an arena of taking a more strategic positioning and be a part of the dialogue. You are changing the operational model, and you talk a lot about communication, culture, and actually also capability enhancements or changes, to put it that way. And let's just take the last one first now about communication. And times of uncertainty go hand in hand with unpredictability. Do you have, or how do you think through communication strategies of how Statnett keeps its trustworthiness during these times of unpredictability? How do you deal with that?
That's a very good question, and it's challenging because as we started out with, we have our own language. We have been introvert and a little bit quiet, and we didn't ever needed to communicate with the surroundings as we do now. Whereas now, the green shift is happening, big changes that are affecting people's lives. And I'm a very strong believer in, if we want to go through the changes that we see, that we have decided to go through on the energy side, we have to be transparent. We have to be clear, and we have to take the dialogue with people and with industries and with partners and with customers. Unless, if we don't do that, it's not going to happen. Because it's a kind of a democratic right to be part of that dialogue. And it's a bit new in Norway because energy has not really been an issue. It's always been there for free. So I'm about transparency. I'm about clarity and robustness. And when saying robustness, I'm thinking we are professionals. We know our business. We're not political. And we're focusing on fact-based discussions.
That's all very good.
Yeah, thank you.
But it's a big challenge as well.
It is.
Because actually what this situation, I think, illustrates with these big swan events and these challenges is that we really do not know. Things are happening where we don't know where it's moving tomorrow or the next week or the week after. So it's the situation in terms of being able to interpret what actually goes on and then to predict what will be happening next is very limited. So that's in contradiction, communicating that is in contradiction to being safe, secure, having an explanation, being able to predict, being trustworthy in the sense that you know what you're doing. Because here you enter a space where you risk if you're too certain about things, you will lose your credibility because something else will happen. So how do you deal with this? What's your way of being able to interpret and to communicate this uncertainty into a culture which is traditionally very safe and very certain?
First of all, and I'm back to that, we need to understand our business. We need to do the analysis in a thorough way so that we have comfort in that we have done our best in changing and unpredictable times. And then, of course, when we communicate, me or the people that are on a regular basis do that in Statnet, we have to be open for that we do not have the answers to everything, but still give some comfort in that we have an analysis house that I'm really impressed with the competence of people at Statnet. And that competence is to a certain extent the best we have in this country. So, but even they will have to say, okay, we could believe, for instance, when we came out with our short-term market analysis prior to Christmas and said very clearly, we will be short on in our power balance with the rest of the world in 4 years, unless we start investing in new production. That's a very strong message. And we stand by that. But of course, when that is challenged by different, either populistic or other analysis that others are doing, we're still standing by that. But we can also be open in our communication saying, this is needed maybe in 4, 5, 6 years, no matter what. This is something we need to work on in this country. So the openness for not being exact need to be there.
Yeah, it's very clear that these people know what they're doing and they have lots of data. Problem is when you have these, what I call the black swan events, is that all your statistics will not reveal any of that. And when that becomes major influencer of your predictions, then they're unlikely will not, they'll be pretty far off from what will actually happen. And then it's not because people are not clever, it's because you don't have data to analyze really, to predict into the future when you have these massive changes. So what do you, how do you, when you have to move away from people you can trust because they know the history and the statistics, how can you navigate them? What are you doing to really be able to maneuver in that
new
space?
One very good example. To that, one very good example is what I said, short-term market analysis before Christmas. We didn't know there would be a war. Maybe some of you knew, I didn't know. And then, of course, and then we said we would need more production within 4 years. We also said the energy situation that we're in currently is extreme. And in a couple of years, it will flatten out and the prices will go lower and be based on more wind, for instance, in the energy system. So we had a message of, you know, calm down, this will pass. And then you get the Ukrainian war. And then it will not pass in 2 years, but maybe in three, maybe in four. And then, of course, when we talk now, when I talk now, when the people at Statnet talk externally or internally, we're open on that. And I think that's understandable, that you do not see the black swans coming or the war in Ukraine coming. Mm. But I think it's about the way you can communicate that. It's a little bit about humbleness when you do it, but still give people clarity on the factors that go into it. I think that's important too.
But I think that's what we can you can bring to the listeners is trying to find that balance, what you know, and what do we don't know? Mm. And what's the uncertainty of that to keep that legitimacy? Mm. I think that's important. I think that's all leaders should think about. And I think a good example, which I think many appreciate, is how in Norway we handled the COVID situation about when we had the authorities saying this is what we know, this is not what we know, and that created that
this
legitimacy.
This is what we know now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's exactly what you alluded to. What do we know and what do we
know? What do we know now?
And I think that also having that humbleness as leadership to say that and stand up for it, but also stand up for what you know.
And remember, what's really important to me, one thing is external, which is important and which was fairly new that Statnet started to take on the external scene. And that's a bit my leadership style as well. I'm transparent and I would like to have that conversation and I believe in openness. Internally, this is also challenging close to 2,000 people being challenged at dinner tables all over the country every day on bottleneck income and cables and what have you. And we need to understand the same. We need to believe in what we're doing. We need to understand no matter what kind of job you have at Statnet.
But that kind of is a fascinating theme to play on, because you have become, I'm not sure if you, maybe you like it, a consumer brand that everybody talks about.
Statnet. Bottlenecks.
No, I don't think it's bottlenecks, but it's about people care about what is it. And I think many don't even know what Statnet's role is. Mm. So it's about how do you communicate to all the various stakeholders, because you have the consumers, you have the industry who needs the energy, you have the producers of power, you have the politicians, indirectly owners, you have the regulators, and then you have the employees. So you have a lot of stakeholders in the midst of this change. Do you communicate not differently, but how do you deal with that balancing act?
That's a very good question. First of all, I fully agree. We need to deal with it. There is a difference. I come from different worlds where fast-moving consumer goods was the focus, and that's the way of communicating. And then you communicate with the Minister of Energy, and then you communicate internally, and then you communicate. I think you have to accept that is very much the job. That is, you know, to talk about our business model, our task at hand, our mission, the importance of, for instance, yesterday and today I'm giving speeches and people in my team are giving speeches all the time and talk about this. We need to be ready to take on the conversation. And I can assure you sometimes it's tempting to not do that. You know, when people get angry, when you get discussions you don't really want to have, when you just want to hide, or you get upset because, excuse me, how hard is it to understand this? But then again, I think that is to understand that is actually the leadership job, externally and internally. To deal with different stakeholders, it's a learning, it's an experience, it's a focus you need to have. Just to accept that people, that the stakeholders are different is a starting point. Internally, we need to understand the same thing. It's very much about line management, leadership, workshops, what kind of tools we have, and, you know, the whole cultural development. Externally, it's about enduring sometimes difficult discussions. Yesterday,
I think the, you know, much of this isn't just normal business kind of challenges. What is striking here is that we are entering this, the green shift. Mm-hmm. We talk about the war, but we leave that out. Green shift is
more than enough with the green
more
shift.
More than enough. Mm-hmm. Now, the green shift in Europe is in a relatively early stage. It is developing, it's moving, and some countries are very sort of ambitious and want to transform this very rapidly and substantially. And which means that as a European society, we're into the unknown. We are into experimental changes that we haven't done before. There are lots of challenges that will come on the table. One of them, just to take an example, would be wind power. If Germany and the UK plans lots of wind power and to put them on the electricity grid. Now, China has been experimenting many and built lots of wind power and decided not to put it on the grid. It's too unpredictable. It destabilizes the grid. You cannot do it. So they stopped all the wind power production or deploying more wind powers to figure out how to deal with this. And decided to produce hydrogen from wind power and not to put it on the grid. And this will substantially impact Statnet.
It is impacting already.
Mm-hmm. We feel it. Mm-hmm. But the decisions and the turnarounds will be substantial. So I think this moving onto the unknown at this high level is really the big challenge. Mm-hmm. And to communicate about that and to manage as a manager of one important Norwegian stakeholder company to do this. And then I hinted at as what kind of an external network you really need to be able to interpret rapidly and to be ahead of a situation like that? Because you have your internal resources and we heard a lot about it, but how do you think about the need to expand your external network to be able to really maneuver in this new environment?
I think that's a very good and important question. And one of the main dilemmas I'm struggling with in my leadership, and we are struggling with in the executive team as well. And I think at Statnet as such, at least especially in the sphere of system operation, as you're, balancing the grid and all of that. First of all, the dilemma for me lies in the understanding in the external environment in Norway of what this really is. It's complex. It's markets, it's balancing, and it's cross-border, much more cross-border than we have talked about before. When we put forward the European scene and the Nordic reality in this, it's difficult to make people understand that. Statnet is working highly internationally, even more than I thought when I started this job, and increasingly so, as you are pointing at, because the whole energy system is now becoming electrified. And so the energy system is becoming the power system, or the power system is becoming the energy system across Europe. And that process takes regulatory development across borders. It takes market development across borders. It takes technology development across borders and across all borders. So the stakeholder management, as a CEO of Statnet, I'm participating at roundtables internationally, in Nordic scenes and arenas. And due to lack of traveling in the last few years, it's been a lot of digital work. But I work more in English sometimes than in Norwegian. And to take that back into the Norwegian scene and then deal with the Norwegian stakeholder scene. Mm-hmm. It's actually a challenge times. Yeah.
So it means that risk management and the ability to interpret, understand, and formulate the sort of understanding and the strategy depends on efforts to expand networks and interactions with others at a very extended level, because that's what gives you the overview. That's what gives you a stake in the maneuvering at this level of risk management that is actually moving up the hierarchies and then be able to connect back. So this networking is, as I see it, possibly the most important risk management approach that you have.
Yeah, risk
when
management.
It comes to it,
I agree with you, risk management, but also, maybe that's what you're saying. My challenge is
the ability to maneuver strategically with some certainty and to be able to sort of keep your flexibility and your accuracy.
But what I think we can now is to try to take this context of Statnet and generalize and say that when a company which has been through a dramatic shift of its environment, how should leaders readjust their stakeholder management networking, both internally and externally? And that brings me back to, and I think you said it, it's not a big difference, if I understood right, between private institutions and public institutions as the need to communicate and create new alliances, both with employees or external. Did I read
No, it? There's no big difference in the need for doing that, but the role is different.
Roles. And the mandates that you have.
And the mandates are given. And I just have to come back to what you just said, because I thought that was a good one. Because the flexibility and the mandate is given nationally. And the understanding is very national. But the need for the flexibility and the need for stakeholder management is cross-border and internationally, and to pull that back into the national scene and to combine that stakeholder-wise, so far at least, it's a bit challenging. I think that's something we really need to work on.
But that also means that at the strategic level, you have a very important role as an educator from the experiences at the external scenes, you have to translate and to educate back to your home base.
I'm very scared of using that word about myself and about Statnett, because might not be well received. But I think I understand what you're saying. Mm. We need to make people and stakeholders understand the reality of the energy system.
Mm.
And the reality of the energy system, it's about interconnection and exchange across borders. It's about exchange across sectors. This is limitless. And then at the same time, the whole issue and mission of Statnett is to position Norway. So how do you combine this communication-wise? And yes, sometimes we have to spend time with people to make them understand that.
Mm. And if we again then try to generalize, and you've been working in private institutions, you've been on numerous boards and now leading this change, can you put some words on the capabilities you kind of brought with you and you can recommend others to work on to be able to lead such a transformation with so many stakeholders, both strategically, operationally, and tactically?
The jobs I have had prior to joining Statnett, they've always been transformation, leading through change, always, in some way or another. Research, head of research, head of group industrial development and change. And it's about people and competent people and competence organizations changing. One of the learnings are what we're talking about here today. You need to be transparent and take on communication as a leadership skill. Communication is very much at the center of it. And then I always say in a competence organization, when people understand why, they will do it. When people understand why, that's when they will do it. It might take some time before they understand why, and it might not be the why that you thought when you started out as a leader. But when you end up with understanding the why in a competence organization, of course they will do it. But if they do not understand why, they will never do it. So it's about doing that. That's one of the main learnings.
That's very good. We're coming to end, but you're also the chairperson for the Research Council of Norway. So you know a lot about what we researchers do or don't do. Mm-hmm. And we are a part of what we're doing also, of course, educating the next generation. Any guidance, ideas of how we should think within the education system?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, I come from the industrial world and heading up the board of the Research Council. I'm together with academic people, and I've also been head of research at Hydro, for instance. So I've been close to people that are very academic and good at their professional work. I think one thing that drives me crazy sometimes is the distance between academics and the industries. Mm. And it goes both ways. My experience currently, and we have this discussion on the board of the Research Council, where we have people, extremely skilled people around the table, from both the university sector, the institute sector, and also industries. And the discussions are good, but we also see after 3-4 years together on this board that the university sector and the academic world could even move closer to what the industry is needing and what the world is needing. And that does not mean that I don't believe in groundbreaking curious-driven research. I do believe in that, and it most likely just saved the world from a pandemic. Sometimes to see the relevance in what research is actually doing for the world and to see the link to reality, I think is good.
Well, that's why I'm very happy that I have the leading CEO, one of the leading CEOs in Norway, one of the leading professors in Norway, together having this conversation. And that's actually what we try to do at BI, to narrow that world. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think, is respect that there is two different worlds, but we need to have some common language Is that also your reflection? You work a lot on the industry.
I think there is a lot of different kinds of research. And, you know, the span is tremendously large. And we are a business school. We are educators and we do research that comes, you know, through publications, but mostly through to our students, through our teaching and through other ways of communicating. And we're a business school. So our topic is business. So if we are not able to interact with the core challenges of actual businesses in the crisis or in the very interesting situation they're in, we are not able to learn what really our students needs to know and to also to address or to get at the most interesting research topics. And, you know, these are at the frontiers of business primarily. So if we stay away from that, we are not really able to catch the essence of what business research is about. Mm. So that's the challenge. Yeah.
That's our challenge. And that's why we're here.
So that's why I hope we had an interesting discussion. We may be able to try to understand a bit more one another through these discussions. So it's really interesting.
So with that, nothing else for me to say. Thank you to both of you. And I hope your listener enjoyed this podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is a BI production. Listen to more podcasts. Go to bi.no/podcasts.